welcome to Silo Busting. I'm your host, Allison Coton, an interaction designer at EPAM Continuum. It's easy for anyone who grew up on Star Trek, Bradbury, and Madeleine L'Engle to hear about artificial intelligence and immediately picture a dystopian future where mechanical minds have overwhelmed our precious human culture with their cold calculations. And truthfully, when we get a chance to talk to ChatGPT or Bing's chatbot, it's been disconcertingly easy to prompt them to make threats, tell untruths, even make uncomfortably aggressive professions of love. Of course they do. It's what every story we've told about them says will happen. After all, their intelligence springs from our collected content. When they behave like sci-fi villains, they're just reflecting back our own fears. Of course, as Kate Hughes, EPAM's Director of Legal Tech and ERM Business Consulting, explains to Alex Jimenez, our Managing Principal of Financial Services Consulting, generative AIs like ChatGPT can also reflect more mundane and ultimately more useful personalities. The bank's helpline operator who tells you your routing number. The junior-level accountant who approves your small business loan. The representative who explains your pension. In the world of financial services, there's so much predictable busy work that a well-trained AI can undertake, ultimately freeing up creative human employees to build connections and answer the tougher questions. There are still plenty of reasons to be cautious of the brave new world these artificial helping hands represent, from digital redlining and biased data to privacy concerns and job loss. Frameworks for responsible AI are emerging, as Hughes explains, and future-thinking companies are already creating safeguards to make sure these new workers reflect the best and not the worst of human skills and knowledge. In the end, that's good for us humans, too, forcing us to confront the biases and limitations built into the stories we tell about the world and the people in it.
We have many challenges. Obviously, the economy is a challenge. A lot of legacy organizations are trying to transform digitally, and they're a lot of the issues come with legacy systems, culture, and so all of this is impacting bankers and banks today. And in many ways, they're really stuck. They don't know where to go. They're confused about what it's the next thing that they should be doing to become a digitally enabled organization and to be future-proofed, et cetera. And in comes in ChatGPT and all the buzz that's coming in the press. And I really have not seen anything like this before. Maybe the closest was the introduction of the iPod, where a lot of consumers were very excited about something and were talking about it. Certainly, there's been other things since, but nothing like ChatGPT. What do you make of this? What do you make of the excitement around this single specific application of artificial intelligence?
Yeah. Hey, Alex. I mean, I think it's, to some extent to be expected, because so many have for so long, I think, been investing and, starting to see a level of incremental benefit from AI. And ChatGPT, I think, is just one of those, everybody looks for the sort of the sweet spot of a scenario or a use case. And I think ChatGPT hit it out of the park. But when you look at the finance industry, like kudos to those, engaged and listening to this conversation, there's been, I think, substantial incremental investment in AI. We've seen, for example, I know Bank of America introduced Erica in 2018, simple chatbot, apparently getting 98% of their clients' answers automate, at least at initial level, automating responses to their clients, apparently 1.5 million interactions every day. So really very heavily used and adopted. And we've seen another group like, say, Danske Bank. They've been investing in the application of AI to minimize and reduce fraud. And they've been successful in seeing false positives reduced by 60%, for example. So I think, the exciting part about ChatGPT is it comes at a time, it's almost like a perfect positive in the sense that there are clear, genuinely huge benefits in being able to interact with an inorganic chatbot in such a way that the conversation is relevant, on topic. And going back to your point about what are banks worried about costs, about uncertainty and so on, you know, I think ChatGPT is just showing that there are some, you know, and as Bank of America have shown, and as Danske Bank, and I'm sure hundreds of other banks have been stepping along this path. I think people are really, really starting to see this sort of truly, if not revolutionary, I would say close to revolutionary step forward in the capability. And so I think that's one part of the story. I think another part of the story is it starts to show that whereas historically many may have thought of AI as introducing cost savings and, you know, thinking about the bottom line, I think that there's ChatGPT has introduced this belief system that you can now break out, that you can now start to grow new markets. For example, there's a bank in Singapore, DBS, that has gone all in on AI. And what it's using AI to do is a more rapid grant of personal loans. So they're looking particularly at small micro businesses. But they're now, you know, using AI to, they have a tagline that says support 1 minute to apply and 1 second to approve. And this is loans of up to 300,000 Singapore dollars, which I think is roughly about 160,000 pounds in today's money. So I think what we're seeing is simply this breakthrough moment where those who have been working hard to invest until now can start to feel vindicated because it's coming into the mainstream. And then there's these other banks who, you know, I think can feel more excited because, you know, I guess there's always that question of trust around AI. But you see these other banks investing and growing markets and really opening new product lines. So I think that's why. I think it sort of brought AI into a relationship with people where they feel a little bit more comfortable, hopefully a lot more comfortable, but it feels like it's going in the right direction. What do you think?
Yeah. So but we've seen application of algorithms, maybe not perhaps AI, in fraud prevention, in underwriting before. But it always was in the back office, right? It was always something that operations or technology was doing. And while there's been some movement in chatbots, it has not been as gripping, as you will, in ChatGPT. And I think you're right. That is resonating with the industry and with a lot of organizations. Unfortunately, there's a lot of organizations that are not ready to use AI. In addition, there's also ChatGPT is not built to be replacing a call center, which you see organizations talk about. It's not built to replace the advice from your licensed advisor or from your banker or from your accountant. And so it's funny to see people get excited and suddenly there's all these articles that saying, ChatGPT will replace your accountant. ChatGPT will replace your psychologist. ChatGPT will replace your stock broker. And it's really interesting because then people start getting into the details of the responses that you're getting from ChatGPT and realize that they're pretty vanilla. That given what it is, which is just building language based on statistics of what is the next word that's appropriate within the topic, that what you're going to get is going to be something pretty, you know, run of the mill, and it's not going to be that interesting. But it certainly speaks to the ability to have those conversations that we haven't had, right? We haven't had been able to have those conversations with a Siri or with an Alexa or some other device like that, you know, had hit our homes in the past. So there's excitement there. But one of the things that I've been talking about for the past month or so is you got to be careful because some of what you're hearing is not real, right? Just recently, I asked ChatGPT about myself, and it invented a whole biography, which I realized what it was. It actually I used to work for a company, and he replaced me with the CEO of that company. And he talked about my life and how I lived in San Francisco and how I did all these things, which are not real. And then when I asked for the sources were made up as well, right? My LinkedIn profile was incorrect. It was not the right link. There were links to articles and so on, which went nowhere, right?
Nah.
So understanding what the AI is built for and understanding how it has been trained is an important thing that even the layperson like myself needs to be aware of, and not just think, you know, AI is going to replace all our jobs, and, you know, either that's going to be amazing or that's going to be terrible.
No, I mean, I hear you well, and I think you make so many good points there. You know, my personal experience was, I'm reaching that stage, and I thought I'd ask ChatGPT about my pension. Now, I'm a UK and US citizen, and I thought that ChatGPT, first of all, gave a nice disclaimer to say that I wasn't to rely on its advice, and secondly, gave me a really good overview of the United States pension system, but did not in any way actually answer my question, because I'm currently domiciled and resident in the UK, and so it was at risk of giving me, you know, quite erroneous data, quite frankly. And so, you know, I think your point is very good, which is, I think we have to be, in many ways, I think we have to be adults when engaging this technology and recognize that, you know, whether it be human in the loop, which is, I think, a good step, but rather perhaps better, whether it be through augmentation of human sensibilities, it's then that I think we really can see the advantages. So I've been doing a lot of work on AI over the last 2 years, and I really believe that one of the finest ways to engage AI is to think about it as a co-collaborator. So, you know, rather than think of it as some, you know, alien other, to sort of bring it into the mix. So, for example, I read recently about a thing called quantum fundamentals, and it's really about investing, and it's about investing using what I would call traditional data, the balance sheet, and so on and so forth, but also then corroborating that information with fundamental observations. So, for example, if a retailer says it's experiencing tremendous growth in the month of December, you might want to corroborate that with alternative data, like, were all the parking lots full? Did you see significant intake increase in takings on particular stores on particular days, and so on? And so if I think about that kind of scenario, that benefits by people perhaps doing their traditional roles of understanding, reading, filings and financial information, but by the same token, asking AI, which is great at reading, you know, largely aggregated information, or perhaps computer vision looking at a parking lot, or and pulling that together. So I think the more that we think about, you know, whether it be ChatGPT, whether it be computer vision, whether it be DALL-E 2, whether it be any one of these tremendous and potent tools, because that's what they are to some extent, I think it's important to think of it as being a part of your system. And if it's a part of your working system, if you think about AI as being something that's potent, that is on staff in some ways, then I think it creates the right zeitgeist around responsibility, because clearly if you have this tremendously potent aid, and, you know, an aid like any other, I think you have to think about how to engage it and think about how to keep the humanity in the equation. Think about how to create, you know, I think you mentioned like purpose, like why are you using it? And have you had the appropriate conversations? If you're hiring a new employee, you'd have a lot of conversations about, you know, what were its skills? What was the intention and purpose that this person, or AI in this case, is going to be applied to? You know, how can you make sure that it is engaged in an appropriate way? How can you look at longevity? Because another good part of the AI discussion is, of course, it can be self-modifying. It can make its own decisions about how to improve its own performance. we can watch its performance over time as we can with employees. So I think, to your point, it's really about, I think, embracing AI and considering it to be on your team, but not granting fundamental, you know, not sort of letting it loose.
I love the idea of augmenting the human with AI and the human giving humanity to the system. Let's talk about risks, though. We kind of talked about, you need to understand what this is for, but from a financial services organization, we got to be thinking about, as we use AI for the more traditional uses like underwriting and fraud prevention, or the more near-term use of customer service and personalization of services, banks need to start thinking about how they manage the risks around AI. And how you can't just say, well, you know, the system told me that this person was a good credit, and therefore we gave them a loan. And, you know, you get into a situation where you start doing what is called digital redlining, where because the data that we're using is biased, and now the decisions that the AI is doing are biased as well. So what are the things that we need to think about as bankers, as someone in a C-suite in a bank, around managing that risk?
Well, you're so right about the need to manage risk. That's clear. And you pointed to some of the issues, like you don't want false information, you don't want disproportionate, you don't want, sorry, bias in your data. There are very many responsibilities. So I think there's a couple of good pointers in this space. So first of all, there's a group of 13 banks called the Wolfberg Group, and they have issued very specific guidance to financiers and bankers. So I encourage people listening to this podcast to go take a look at it. And it will point to things like a legitimate purpose, making sure that there is accountability and oversight, as we've discussed. Making sure, too, though, that there's something like openness and transparency. And I think that's a very important point, again, going to the sort of declarative nature of the employment of AI, is making sure that wherever this AI is employed, particularly if it's employed in what are called high-risk scenarios, that the use of that AI is transparent to anyone who is being impacted. And that actually segues me into a discussion of another great sort of landmark, if you will, in terms of how to ensure that your application of AI is staying within a responsible space. And that is that the European Commission in 2021 introduced a proposed legislation for the harmonization of AI regulation across the EU. And in that harmonized regulation, which as it is now proposed, but we anticipate it will become law either by the end, enacted by the end of 23 or early 24. And in fact, Parliament is voting on this, we believe, this month, European Parliament. That legislation embellishes or sort of extends, it agrees with and extends to some extent what that Wolfberg Group have recommended. And, you know, again, key points are transparency, being clear about the intent and the person, managing privacy and data governance, including human agency and oversight. So the European Commission is doing something exactly aligned with what the Wolfberg Group is doing. I guess the difference, as one might expect from a government authority, is that the European Commission is introducing penalties, and they have actually taken a risk-based approach. So the legislation as proposed identifies four layers of risk. The topmost is prohibited systems. Certain uses of AI will be banned in the European Union. But it also then breaks it into low, medium, and high. And it's the high-risk systems will have to be registered. Now, many may think, oh, high-risk is military use, or sadly in these days, but actually not. A high-risk AI system is any system that impacts essentially those social pathways. And so banks, in their approval of loans or their granting of mortgages or, you know, credit scoring, for example, are very much those gatekeepers. And so the European Commission has undertaken to introduce a penalty of 30 million euros or 6% of your last financial year's worldwide turnover, whichever is the greater. So, you know, so going back to your question, you know, what are the risks that you have to mitigate against? You know, there's kind of the good news and maybe a little bad news, but I think it's for the safety of us all. The good news is you know, there's a very explicit recommendation, both from industry groups and from the European Commission and increasingly from other jurisdictions such as the US, about what to look for. Now, evidently, the key is to take this guidance into action. And so, you know, arguably, there's sort of two pathways for any organization. I think the first pathway is to really make sure that the organization has its own governance and policy, brand reputation and ethic. You know, and I think that is something I, you know, I'm sure most organizations have in place today. So I guess that sort of first pathway is to continue what they already do, but perhaps build into it. I mean, I mentioned governance to someone recently and they just kind of rolled their eyes. And I guess it means different things to different people. But I think, you know, if we use the word governance with a small g, you know, I think it's really important to see that as, you know, it starts with simple conversations and it starts with the motive of that organization to wish to see it be self-determining to drive its own outcomes. And we've seen the World Economic Forum data that suggests that those banks that are early adopters or those financial institutions that are early adopters of AI can expect their growth to be quite substantial, 2x, 3x by 2050. And those that don't adopt to perhaps start falling behind. So I think that's the sort of the first area of consideration, which is to make sure that banks double down on their emphasis on leadership, emphasis on value, emphasis on plan direction. So that's a piece. I think the second part act that organizations, banking, finance should undertake is to really, really start familiarizing with the actual content of these proposed legislative items. Now, EPAM's prepared something that makes that easy and accessible. I'm sure, though, that, you know, if it begins with simply familiarizing yourself with the websites where these rules are published, there's an assessment called the Assessment for Trustworthy AI. You can take a look at it. So I guess that second component is to you know, really just become familiar with what will be mandated. Now, I believe personally that the organization that moves forward to embrace this, that leads as it would with any other investment or initiative, with its own values held high and with an ethical stance that it leads, I honestly believe that those organizations will naturally lean into risk management. I guess the point about referring to legislation and legality and so on is that perhaps if one doesn't invest soon enough, one might find the stick.
You're going to have to, yeah.
Yeah. And so I really think, and you know, like, you know, I don't know. I mean, at EPAM, we've done a lot of thinking and planning. And I would suggest that from a cold start, let's say, for example, you just have to get an inventory of your AI as it's being used. If you start with something as simple as that to starting to feel you have an active, regular governance cycle and starting to believe that as a leadership team, you've really grasped, you know, the nettle and that you are, you know, really seeing leadership reach action, reach outcome. I'm guessing that might be a minimum 12-month, 18-month journey. Certainly at EPAM, we think 18 months minimum.
Yep.
So really to manage risk, I think whether it be, you know, stick or carrot led, engaging is key.
And it's not like any other technology. You can't just rely on your providers to say all the appropriate measures have been taken, whether they're they're compliance related, legally, or even technology related, that even if you buy all your technology from vendors, that you need to be aware of the risks that are out there, just like you do for everything else, and be able to have a program around looking at the risk around AI, and not just the risk around AI, but how you're applying it. What is the data that you're using to model or part of the machine learning data set? What's in that data? And it's not a program that should be managed by the CIO or the CTO. Yes, they understand the technology. Yes, they have a handle on that. But this is a C-suite issue that obviously the folks in the legal team and the risk team should be looking at it, but it should also be addressed by everyone else. Because as we start applying AI to all parts of the organization, then it becomes an enterprise-wide capability, right? So, you know, you have AI in how you hire people, right? How you review resumes or applications that come through you. And it, you know, there are already systems that do that. If you look at how you manage your books and how you prepare your financial statements, then we're talking about the office of the CFO, et cetera. All of those areas, we're seeing AI applied to it. So you got to be able to, as you said, look at the inventory of that and understand the overall reach of these systems and what they're doing and how they're doing it. So a regulator comes in or an examiner comes in and asks you, explain to me how this system works. It can't just be, you got to talk to, Bob who sits in technology to respond to that, right?
Absolutely. And I think it's really important to examine what you've said, because it is, I think, sometimes believed that, oh, AI is technical, therefore the technical people should know about this. And, you know, that's effectively sandboxed it somewhere in the organization. But it doesn't, it isn't true. First of all, you know, our ethos and the way we've designed our assessments for our clients, for example, recognize that, you know, as the European Commission's proposed legislation recommends, as the banking groups recommend, that, you know, this all actually begins with intention. And so there is no need in the first instance, as you're establishing your policy, your program, as you're establishing how to innovate in this space, there's no need necessarily to have to understand the technical details of AI at all. It is actually more to understand, you know, in some sense, it's almost like a classic product scenario where you're planning for your outcome, you're planning your strategy. Now, necessarily, you'll also want to involve your CIO, CTO, but to your point, absolutely. This is really about leadership. It's about culture. So, you know, for me, and again, I know this is my background, this is all about innovation. Mm-hmm. This is not about, I guess, your grandfather's, grandmother's regulatory compliance where we all sit and yawn. It's not that. It's absolutely giving yourself an opportunity to do things differently and to some extent really take a step back in a grand sense and set a new strategic North Star. And I think one of the things that financial institutions grapple with a great deal is technical debt. Mm-hmm. And you know, after like more than 30 years in engineering and more latterly in law, you know, I can see that technical debt is a boat anchor. Well, the good news about AI is if you treat it as an innovation, if you enter this with the culture of learning, innovation, if you enter it with a sense of balance and proportionality, as we've been describing, you can really start to, I think, end around some of the limitations of your older systems. And I think the banks that we see, or the financial institutions we're already starting to see accelerate, have really used this as a tool, not only to obviously better serve their customers, deliver personalization, anticipate, predict. There's all these facets. But I think what they've also been able to do is say, you know what? I think this actually might liberate us from some of those really heavy debt-ridden areas. Because the techniques and the tools that we can now employ are so different. The other piece of what you said, though, is to be super practical about holding oneself accountable. So both the European Union and the Wolfberg Group talk about this accountability, of course. And actually, there will be civil and criminal potentially, you know, liability. So, you know, accountability is important. But what you said is that, you know, you have to have a method. And so, yes, you know, like, for example, the European Commission talks very clearly about the need to be able to demonstrate that you've employed data sets that are without bias, to be able to test, to run your tests in a sandbox, and so on and so forth. The other thing that they talk through is the life cycle. So not only do you have to be able to do that in the first instance, but again, you know, let's go back to that loan system, you know, granting more loans, which is a great thing, to perhaps more minority groups, which is a great thing. But it's also then taking the time to use data to instrument how well that AI that acted to grant the loan to the individual has in fact performed in market. So if you take, for example, AI loans, you compare them with what I'll call human granted loans, for want of a better term, then is it in fact the AI, is the AI, how is the AI performing? So yep. I think to your point, it's a great rigor. And there's an opportunity to make this very practical, data-driven, and accelerate the organization toward their future strategy. So very exciting time.
Yeah, I really like the idea of the AI being augmenting the human, and the human bringing the human touch to AI, as you mentioned earlier. We're out of time. This was great. Well, thank you so much for the conversation. We probably could go for an hour more, maybe more.
it's a great topic,
but I think people can go and find some of the documentation that you mentioned. In the U.S., we have the Algorithmic Accountability Act, which is not, you know, it's proposed. We have the EU. There's also one in the U.K., correct?
Yeah, I think that's progressing. But I think the big ones, I mean, the ones to take care of, I think, at the moment, the ones to focus on are this EU harmonization of AI legislation, and in the US to look at the Algorithmic Accountability Act, as you said, and to look at the AI rights bill, which is another interesting undertaking, and of course being led by and championed by Joe Biden.
Great. Well, great to talk to you, and maybe we'll do a second piece of this sometime in the future.
Sounds great. And thanks, Alex.
This has been Silo Busting, a podcast from EPAM Continuum. EPAM Continuum integrates business, experience, and technology consulting focused on accelerating breakthrough ideas into meaningful impact. Why do we do this? Because real opportunities aren't siloed. Thanks to Kate Hughes and Alex Jimenez for the great conversation. Cheers to Kit Palalis, our sound engineer extraordinaire, for getting this podcast recorded. Applause to Ken Gordon, our producer, for all his masterminding behind the scenes. I'm your host, Allison Coton, and I'm off to read A Wrinkle in Time.